129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. God, neighbor, and yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. You know, on Just Love each week, we talk with those people who are out in the world doing things, writing about things in the world. And we, you know, try to encourage our listeners and ourselves to kind of think about those things from the perspective of our Catholic values, our Catholic thought, our Catholic tradition, because we have something to say about how we think the world is best ordered in order to protect the dignity of the human person and to enhance human potential. So we look to create a world that is more just and more compassionate. We don't have to wait till heaven and the kingdom of God in heaven for justice and peace. Now, we believe that it's not going to be total. It's not going to be all in all until the kingdom of heaven. But it doesn't mean that we can't try to make some of those values, some of that reality here. And I have to say, without becoming overly depressed, I do think there is so much in our world these days which is not anyway reflective of those values of peace, of justice, of harmony, of reconciliation that one day will be all in all, which in effect makes it even more imperative and more important that we think about how we do try to advance the cause of justice, of peace, of charity, of hope in our world because of all of the challenges that we face to that. So, today on Just Love, we're going to speak about a natural disaster and what people are doing to respond. They didn't ask for the storms down in Louisiana that they came devastating, but they do provide an opportunity for us to respond in a way that is compassionate, a way that alleviates the suffering, that tries to restore what was devastatingly destroyed by those natural disasters. So today on Just Love, we're going to be speaking with the Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Baton Rouge, David Aguilar. And we're also then going to speak about with a professor from Mississippi State University. Now, that may seem a little bit strange since we're talking about Louisiana, but we're doing it because his own family and neighbors are in the Baton Rouge area, and kind of he went back to help out his family that was there. So thank you for tuning in today and joining us on Just Love. Tom, before we go to our first guest, is there a news item or so that you'd like to share with us?
There is, Monsignor. You know, I mean, you had mentioned about we're here, and obviously we talk about the values of peace and justice in the world somewhat and bringing hope to people. And, you know, actually, over this past week, as people are aware, a lot of attention has been paid to the closing of the Olympic Games down in Rio. There was some terrific things that wound up happening during that 31st Olympiad. One of the things was that obviously we had a refugee team that wound up taking place, as well as the...
But they didn't win any medals.
They didn't win any medals, Monsignor. No, I'm sorry.
About the medals,
I know.
Isn't it?
Well, I think it's interesting of the 206 nations that participated.
I guess I'm supposed to say it's not all about the medals. It's about kind of sportsmanship. It's about world unity. It's about diversity. Mm-hmm. But how come all I hear about who won all the medals?
Well, because I think the medals do matter. I mean, okay. they are important once a year. But actually, you know, this year was kind of...
Hey, you know what I heard?
What?
What I heard? You know, taxation without representation, all that type of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and just public policy. I hear, not verified, but that the people win the gold, win the medals, they have to pay tax on the medals they receive.
That is correct. Yes, they do.
Ah, that's not fair. That's not fair.
It makes you wonder. I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, if you think about it, because they are gold, they are silver, so it makes you wonder, maybe at that point, if you come in third place, you're kind of grateful for a bronze.
Well, okay. I doubt it. But anyway. Okay, so anyway.
Oh, so I would say, well, you know, it was funny when you mentioned about the participation medals. Actually, there was one circumstance that's interesting. Abby D'Agostino, who was running for the United States in the 5,000-meter semifinal, and New Zealand's Nikki Hamblin were competing, and they actually wound up bumping into one another. But in the process of getting up, they actually accompanied one another, and one was hurt, and they helped each other across the finish line. So believe it or not, Monsignor, even in the Olympics, they did give out, the International Olympic Committee gave those two women a fair play award because they did stop to help one another after falling together.
All right, that's nice. I like that. That's pretty good. But the other one, when I watched some of the Olympics, is there was one other race. It was a long, long race. I forget which one it was, but maybe it was the 10,000 meters. Maybe that was the 10K. Yeah, I think it was. But anyway, that one, the guy who wound up winning, he tripped and he fell early in the race, and then he got up and he won the race. So I don't know. I guess if you fall, you can get up.
Yeah, there's the perseverance bit. There's also another person people were talking about was there was a power walker from France who also he got very sick while he was running, and it was incredible.
Power walkers look funny to me.
They do.
Yeah, I mean, they should run or they should walk or they should jog. The power walkers look to me like they're really. They're trying to run, but they're trying not to run and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I know there's a certain form that they have to keep. And you know, this guy was going along, and he actually developed...
I prefer the form of the gymnast. It's a lot more graceful than the power walkers.
This is true. And he got very ill. But he got, as you said, he got up, and he continued, and he finished the race. So again, I think there was a lot to give, to inspire people, to give hope to people at this summer's Olympics. And we have some more stories, you know, to talk about. Maybe we could talk about those later.
Okay, so let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is David Aguilar, the executive director of Catholic Charities of Baton Rouge. And Louisiana, Baton Rouge has been particularly devastated by what is the worst natural disaster since Hurricane Sandy. David, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. This story has been underplayed, and I'm very thankful to have this time to help people understand what's going on down here, what has happened over the past week.
So why don't you do that? Now, I know, you know, the whole country is aware of kind of what happened with Katrina a dozen years ago or however long ago that was. And, you know, we all tend to be a little bit geographically challenged. So set the whole kind of stage of the devastation. We know New Orleans, Baton Rouge, how far apart. So give our listeners just a little sense, because as you rightly say, it's been so underreported.
Yeah. Well, basically, you know, if you imagine Louisiana as the boot, you know, the shape of our state, just about everything from the foot on down was underwater last week. From I-10, a little bit north of I-10, which cuts across South Louisiana, a little bit north of I-10 and south, was just turned into a lake. I tried to go for a bike ride in Texas the weekend before, coming back through, driving along Interstate 10 from Texas back into Baton Rouge was like driving on a causeway, just surrounded by water the entire way. The full scope of the disaster really isn't even known yet. There have been, you know, I can give you numbers, but they kind of boggle the mind. You can't, you know, what does it mean that 110,000 homes have been damaged? You know, that's a large number, and it sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but I have trouble comprehending what that is. You know, there have been about 120,000 people who have registered with FEMA. That number will continue to go up. You know, there are some staggering numbers of individual assistance already approved, which is kind of the daily measure of how quickly the federal government is responding. And there's been about $125 million of individual household assistance approved. What basically happened is there was a rainstorm that came which is, you know, happens in the summer. But this was a particular kind of event that nobody around here had ever experienced. It was basically a hurricane that formed right over the Louisiana and never quite turned into a hurricane. And then there weren't the normal steering currents of, you know, high ridge pressures and low ridge pressures and all that kind of thing to make the thing move along. And it just sat here. We were notified of flash flood possibilities, you know, which happens, you know, every couple of afternoons or so during the summer. We were notified of, you know, rainfall possibly of 10 to 15 inches. But by the time this thing passed for a few days, some places had rainfall of 30 inches. Streets and homes who have never flooded had 4 feet of water in them. About 80% of the people who were impacted do not have flood insurance, most of them because they did not live in a floodplain and it was not required. The rain and the water came up very suddenly, so a lot of people were caught off guard and caught in their homes. There were tens of thousands of people rescued in a more controlled way than like Katrina, because there were a lot of boats. There were boats that were able to go into the communities and rescue people. The response this time, you know, everyone, we've been doing responses to hurricanes and disasters. We're kind of the disaster capital of the world down here. We've had oil spills, tornadoes. We even occasionally have ice storms, and those tend to paralyze us almost as much as a flood does, because we don't know what ice is down here. But the response has been, it was slow to get started because the response infrastructure was impacted. Roads were closed, warehouses were flooded, trucks were flooded. All those things that usually get out real quickly after a disaster were unable to get out as quickly as normal. But the we learned a little bit, and the cooperation that is taking place right now at the state level, at the national level, and then with all the local agencies that are involved in response, and then especially long-term recovery. I've never experienced multiple different agencies working together as transparently and as seamlessly and as quickly as normal.
We're speaking with David Aguilar, the executive director of Catholic Charities of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and we're speaking about the devastating floods that have impacted that area of Louisiana, which have been grossly underreported in the media. David, I heard what you said, but give us a little sense of, I know you say I-10 and south, so where's I-10 in comparison with Baton Rouge?
Okay. I-10 runs right through Baton Rouge, right through the center of Baton Rouge. It basically connects New Orleans to Baton Rouge to Houston. You know, I-10 runs from Jacksonville, Florida to San Diego. So it's the southernmost interstate that runs across the entire country.
And again, to help our listeners put this in perspective, how far is Baton Rouge from New Orleans?
Baton Rouge is about 70 miles from New Orleans.
And is it west and north, northwest?
Yeah, it's slightly northwest of New Orleans. Okay. We're about 45 miles east of Lafayette. And on both sides of us, Baton Rouge is surrounded by swamp. And
now,
that was one of the problems here.
So was New Orleans hit by it also?
No, some parishes to the east of us. We have civil parishes down here instead of counties. A couple of civil parishes to the east of us were impacted, but it did not reach over into the New Orleans area.
Okay, so it didn't.
However,
get
there will be a secondary impact in New Orleans because people who cannot get back into their homes, and especially renters, working poor, whose rents are going to go up, et cetera. There are no apartments available in Baton Rouge right now. We think many of those people will end up moving to New Orleans. And so New Orleans will deal with a secondary impact of this storm.
Now, I am a little familiar with some of the things you're talking about because they have certain parallels with what we experienced in New York 4 or 5 years ago with Superstorm Sandy. And so I understand the number of houses that were damaged. What's your estimate on the number of houses that were damaged to such an extent that they're uninhabitable and people had to move out?
Yeah. You know, I've
heard
that Well, I've heard that 40,000 people were displaced. Now, what is the complete assessment? You know, I think they're about 20% complete of 20% complete of making assessments on homes in terms of what are uninhabitable, what won't be. There's been a tremendous amount of just because everybody was impacted. You know, it's not your typical thing where there's a swath of destruction from a tornado or what typically happens on the eastern side of the eye where the destruction is the most intense. This was widespread, and it was non-discriminatory. And neighborhoods are coming out and just everybody pitching in and helping each other gut their houses. So there's a lot of immediate recovery work and response that's taking place that, you know, normally we don't see. Normally what we see is, you know, people coming in and one neighborhood helping another, et cetera. But this is all people, you know, combining their resources and working together on one another's homes and their very next door neighbors.
So, you know, again, I want to give our listeners a sense, because unless people have lived kind of through this, they don't get a sense of it. I mean, I think I know, and correct me if I'm wrong. I believe with Katrina, I think at the time Katrina hit, New Orleans was probably a city of around a little bit under 500,000 people, 475,000 people. You know, a few weeks after Katrina, it was a city about half that size of, you know, maybe 225,000 people. So, like, it was just half the city just wasn't there anymore in terms of population. If we look now at Baton Rouge in that area, how much of that area was, you know, people had to get out?
Yeah, it won't be like it was in New Orleans, where New Orleans actually, I think you may be understated. I mean, New Orleans went from 500,000 to basically zero. You know, there were very, very few places left where anybody could live in New Orleans. Baton Rouge's population increased about 300,000 in those weeks after Katrina. But this water came in and then it receded fairly quickly. So people are shelters are closing down more quickly. There's about 2,300 people left in shelters right now today, whereas there was about 10,000 or so a week ago. So shelters are closing down. People are getting back. We don't think there's going to be a need for the those massive housing accommodations that were put together real quickly after Katrina.
Right.
Well, Livingston Parish, there's one parish east of us, Livingston Parish, 90% of it went underwater. And that's the one parish, it was the quickest growing parish in our state, or relatively, you know, it's one of the top fastest growing parishes in our state. We're concerned about how that's going to affect that community and whether or not there may be some type of permanent change to their population and their demographic change and trends in their economic trends as well.
We're speaking with David Aguilar, the executive director of Catholic Charities of Baton Rouge. David, I now want to speak to you about something that is critically important, and sometimes it's forgotten. Catholic Charities has a lot of expertise, but one of the things is with long-term recovery. And because, you know, the news cameras go away, everybody goes away, but it's not over. Could you speak a little bit to that and the role of Catholic Charities in staying with it long term?
Right. And, you know, I think that's where our Catholic mission and, you know, the whole theme of your program, Just Love, really is demonstrated. You know, we believe that this world is sacred. That the kingdom of God, you know, as Jesus said, the kingdom of God, this is it. The kingdom of God is at hand. The reverence that we have for Holy Communion, for example, and for the Eucharist and those sacramental aspects of our lives, to really be a Eucharistic community, we should extend that same reverence to the world around us, to creation, to our neighbors. And in these days after a storm, there's a lot of outpouring of goodwill and generosity that is desperately, desperately needed. But what we fail to understand is that in addition to the property damage, there are lives that are damaged. There are people who are teetering on the edge of permanent dependency, serious health and physical health and mental health issues, who possibly will never, ever recover from this kind of storm. We have a tendency to put back money in our infrastructure and build our bridges and our roads and our buildings to higher specs and higher standards. We're going to be here for the next 3 to 5 to 10 years working with people who are impacted by this. We think it's our obligation and our duty, and really our sacred duty, to rebuild their lives so that they too are stronger and more resilient and more capable of responding to the next storm, just as we invest in our physical infrastructure. And what happens to people is things like, there are unintended consequences. You might have, I was in a convenience store the other day. There was a guy standing there. All of a sudden he blurts out, "What? She's trying to evict me?" And this guy was a 101st Airborne veteran. What happens is that money comes in and it's available for homes to be remodeled, improved, elevated, strengthened. A lot of people will do that, and then they'll increase their rents, or they might decide that their rental home now is suitable for them to live in. And then people will get evicted. People's rents will go up. Their housing costs will go up. They may not be able to afford it. They will, miss their rental payments. They can't afford the utility bills. So then they're threatened with homelessness. We've seen that after Katrina. There are some families here because of the tremendous demand for housing that still exists, affordable housing especially, that still exists in our community. We've had about a 95% occupancy rate in rental property in Baton Rouge for the past 10 years. That occupancy rate right now is, 100%, and who knows when anything is going to become available for some of the people who literally will be left without homes after this disaster. So, FEMA makes recommendations and makes estimates of, hundreds of millions of dollars of damage to property and things like that. We estimate right now that there's probably $150 million of needs that will go unmet, cash that will be needed to help rebuild people's lives. And we've seen this time and time again. We've seen this time and time again when we're into the recovery process for the long term, 3 to 5 years out from now. People without flood insurance, we're not sure. Last I heard is that there will not be a bailout from FEMA for people without flood insurance as there was after Katrina. Even people with flood insurance and people who do receive FEMA benefits, they want to rebuild you to pre-storm standards, and they will, they're very, very careful, and as they should be with public money, about what is called deferred maintenance. As a gross oversimplification and example, I frequently say, if your roof had a hole in it before the storm and it was blown away, the government will pay to rebuild the roof, but it's still got a hole in it because that hole was deferred maintenance. Now, that's a gross overstatement, but that's kind of what happens.
You're very right in terms of talking about how there are the rules and the regulations. And as you know, what happens is they get negotiated out over time. And so you kind of got to always advocate for FEMA doing what needs to be done, and then figuring out how you write the rules in order to get them to do what they need to. But I want to ask you specifically, sure, what are the services, and how does Catholic Charities help the people who have been impacted by this the flooding and the storm? What type of services are you providing yourselves?
Well, between Catholic Charities Baton Rouge and Catholic Charities New Orleans, we've distributed, and the bulk of this has been distributed at Catholic Charities New Orleans through their Second Harvest Food Bank. We've distributed about 500 tons of material supplies in the impacted area over the past week. We ourselves have given out thousands of dollars of gift cards, gas cards, to people to help them get back home, to get the things they need to begin the recovery process. We have sent out mental health workers into the impacted areas, into the shelters to do crisis counseling. Recovery starts immediately. Recovery starts the day before a storm, with pre-disaster planning. But recovery really starts the day after a storm. We tend to think of this as, first there's rescue, then there's the response, then there's recovery, then there's rebuild. But Recovery, you can start making your plans and taking steps to recover, which is a mentally health-wise for your mental functionality. It's really important that people begin to take action. They begin to start seeing that despite their feeling of being overwhelmed and feeling overwhelmed and actually being overwhelmed, there are still things that they can focus on to begin their recovery process. So we've been focusing on the shelters where the most desperate the most vulnerable populations are. We have been in all the shelters in our area. We hope to have touched every person in a shelter by the end of this weekend, beginning to work with them on their recovery plans, meet their needs that they need at home, get them the resources that are required, help them apply for FEMA assistance, help them apply for the emergency food stamp program, for the individual housing program, all those things that are available through the government. And then we also are seeking, we're seeking cash donations. You can go to CatholicCharitiesBR.org, and that cash is extremely important to help people who have more needs than what FEMA pays for or who might not even qualify, because property owners tend to get their benefits. Renters, it's hard to find assistance for them to help them fully recover.
Hey, David, I just want to thank you. You've been incredibly generous with your time. I know how busy a time like this is because everything needs to be done yesterday. And for the people, and the people who are struggling, timing is everything because it's there. So, David, I know how busy you are. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I hope we've done a little bit to raise awareness throughout the country that just because this doesn't have a name, it doesn't mean it isn't devastating and that the country doesn't have to respond and help. So, David Aguilar, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for this opportunity. Okay. God bless y'all.
David Aguilar, the executive director of Catholic Charities in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, talking to us about the devastating floods that are there and the recovery effort that Catholic Charities is right in the middle of in helping people to rebuild their lives. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love God, neighbor, self, and we'll create a world that is a little bit more just and a little bit more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. New Orleans has been hit again. Louisiana has been hit again. Now Baton Rouge more than the rest of Louisiana with devastating floods. Underreported, probably one of the reasons, sounds superficial, but because they didn't give it a name. And so they just kind of talk about the floods that are there, but devastating. Over 100,000 people already have registered for some type of help with FEMA. Tens of thousands of people driven out of their homes. Hundreds of millions of dollars of damages that have been done. Just devastating and very underreported. We just got finished speaking with David Aguilar, who is the executive director of Catholic Charities in Baton Rouge, in the middle of the recovery, being assisted by Catholic Charities of New Orleans. And in a few minutes, we're going to speak with somebody who actually has family members who were impacted. And he's a professor at Mississippi State University, but he went back and has been helping his family there. The one thing that David Aguilar spoke about, which I want to just kind of share with our listeners, because it's a very, very important part of our Catholic tradition. And our Catholic tradition, which David Aguilar spoke about, is that we kind of want to stay with people for the long term. It's not a one and off, but basically, we want to help people to rebuild their lives so they can live in greater dignity. And one of the things that I think it's important for our listeners to know is the incredibly important role that Catholic Charities has had in making our country aware of the need for long-term recovery. Now, I want to talk about the Red Cross for a moment, who does incredible immediate response in trying to make sure that the immediate need for shelter, immediate need of disasters, whether they be a fire in a neighborhood or whether they be something like Katrina or whether they be like Superstorm Sandy. And, you know, every organization sometimes has its critics because they didn't respond fast enough, et cetera, et cetera. So be it. But the Red Cross does a great job in immediately kind of responding to that. But Catholic Charities has an expertise in taking that immediate response and turning that into staying with people for long-term recovery. And I would say that the contribution Catholic Charities had made across the nation was when the tragedy of the World Trade Center hit in September 11th, 2001. And it was almost the first time in this area in anybody's memory that there was this devastating disaster that impacted so many communities, that the community got together and said, hey, we have to provide some coordinated response to this. And Catholic Charities in New York was asked to kind of take a lead in coordinating that and in providing the professional support long term for families and individuals who were trying to rebuild their lives. As David Aguilar said, you know, it does mean putting together a plan so that people kind of deal with all the aspects of their lives that they need to put back together again. And there's a technical term, which is, you know, not very fancy, that we use for that. We kind of call it case management. And what it basically means is you work with an individual or family professionally. You try to work with that family to figure out, assess what their needs are. And then you develop a plan to meet each of those needs, knowing the resources that are available. And then you advocate and you support the individual or family in implementing that plan so they put their life back together again. And in a disaster such as what's going on in Louisiana, one of the things that you're looking at, where is somebody going to go to school? What are they going to do for work if their business was flooded out? Housing is a critical issue. So what I'm saying is after September 11th, Catholic Charities in New York coordinated that with 17 other agencies and proved how important that was, so much so that now it's built into every disaster since Katrina. formal part of the response is to making sure that those who need it do get a professional, a case manager who can help them put their lives together. So that's what David was talking about in trying to reach out to people in the shelters, making sure they had a plan, seeing what they were going to do. So I wanted to mention that because that's an important part of the contribution that Catholic Charities makes throughout the country. So I think we will take a break now. And when we come back, we're going to speak with somebody who is a professor at Mississippi State University, Sky Cooley, but who has family in the Baton Rouge area and went back, and he can give us kind of firsthand what his family went through. So I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we are speaking this week about the devastating flooding in Louisiana around the Baton Rouge area. We just spoke with David Aguilar, the executive director of Catholic Charities in Baton Rouge, about their response, helping those who have been impacted and flooded by this. And now I am really pleased that we're going to speak with somebody who has kind of been lending a hand with his own family in kind of helping to kind of recover. And we'll get a little bit of a firsthand report on what is going on there. So let me turn and welcome Sky Cooley, who is assistant professor of public relations at Mississippi State University and who has family in the Baton Rouge area. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Monsignor, it's my absolute pleasure. It's an honor to be on the phone with you and all the work that you do. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
Well, could you please, and I know, let me express my kind of my sympathy for all the people in the area who are going through so much, and particularly your own family members. Give our listeners, because the media has, in my judgment, so underreported what's going on there. Can you give us a little bit of your own firsthand experience about what happened, what the floods were, how they've impacted people?
Oh, absolutely. So, well, first I'll say that Louisiana has practice with this. You know, we've had four major storms in 10 years. So these are people that really know how to respond to these kinds of things. The scope of the devastation with this is pretty incredible. I was there in Baton Rouge for Katrina, and that was pretty bad, in the Baton Rouge area. I've seen tornadoes blow through when I lived in Tuscaloosa, but a flood really does impact everyone. Everybody's house has damage, and it's massive structural damage. And so what happens is this water seeps in, and it gets into the sheetrock, and then it gets into the insulation. And all of that has to be cut out, and you have to take tiles up, all the panels off the floor, move all of that stuff out, and that's just to get it livable so that you can then start to rebuild. And so everybody has to work. This storm was, when it came through, the worst that the area had seen was the 1983 flood, and that was pretty bad. That was a pretty devastating flood for the area. This was much, much worse than that. I think the river actually got up 3 feet higher. And they had also put an interstate system through very recently that had put up a partition in sort of the middle. And so it served as a dam that basically forced water in areas that water had not typically gone. And so people experienced levels of water in their homes that, even from the 83 flood, they had no idea that they were going to get those levels.
So, Sky, let me say, is that interstate, because a previous guest talked about I-10, is that interstate?
This is actually I-12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so this flooding was worse than 83, and in some senses even worse than Katrina.
Yeah, I think so. I think with a hurricane, people sort of know what to expect in that area. You know, you tape up the windows, the glass breaks, you got some structural damage, but very few people experience flooding. And so people know the structural work, and you can get through it, and you can still live in your home. In a lot of cases, after a hurricane. With the flood, this was worse. This is the worst the area has ever seen. And everybody's home is damaged. I think 90% of the homes in the area, something like 100,000 houses out of like 140 or 30,000 or something like that, it's everybody's affected. And so it's hard to even go out and help other people, even though you try to, just because you have so much work to do yourself. And it's very labor-intensive work. I mean, you really have to take out everything because you're talking about basically sewage water that had been floating through everyone's home. And so you have to go through this process of cleaning that really is very labor-intensive.
And your own family was impacted, weren't they?
Well, actually, my family was because of that interstate partition that they had put up, my family's house didn't get flooded. And we were one of the lucky ones, really that 10% that didn't get flooded. But my brother-in-law, he got flooded. My stepbrother, they got flooded. And so we basically used my mom's house this last weekend, and are going to use it again next weekend, and you're going to use it again the weekend after that as sort of a staging ground. So I work at Mississippi State University, and we had students that came in and stayed at my mom's house, and we went out and, cut sheetrock and pulled insulation and ripped up floors because mom's got one of the houses that you can, that you can stay in that doesn't have any damage or any mold in it.
So, why do you think it's been so underreported?
Well, I think there are a couple reasons for that. And the first is that we've got an entertainment sort of driven news. And I was telling Tom when he had called that I have you guys on my radio dial in my car. And the reason why I do have the Catholic Channel as part of my dial instead of CNN or Fox News is because you spend time to talk about things in a conversational way. And our news media, because of the advertising competition, they basically become entertainment channels. And that requires very specific narrative packages. And if things don't fit within those, they really don't get covered. And so you always, you know, political debates and riots and live events and those things that can be dramatic and that can be polarizing and can be divisive, that's what the news media sort of goes for. And it's the prisoner's dilemma for national news media, because if they don't and the other channels do, then they'll lose those eyeballs and thus that revenue. And so because of that, we get these packages, and anything that doesn't fit within those just gets ignored. And people helping other people, you know, I think also that the what is the disaster narrative is also very, very constricted, right? Like, it doesn't include, you know, trying to raise other people up so that you can also rise. It doesn't include, you know, using the graces that God has given us to help others, you know, realize and use theirs. It just doesn't include those kinds of things. I think that it should, but it doesn't. And I think that part of the reason why the piece that I wrote got attention is because people are tired of that. People are frustrated with that. And I think that we want more, but as citizens individually, we just don't know how to effectively get it.
Yeah, we're speaking with Sky Cooley, who is professor of public relations at Mississippi State University. And although he's over in Mississippi, he's got experience because his family was in the area that was devastated by the floods. His mom's house was one of the few that escaped, but is serving kind of as a staging ground because his in-laws' houses were, and volunteers are kind of using his mom's house, and everybody's using it to try to help other people kind of recover from this. Sky, you're going back and looking at what was going on. It's pretty extensive in the devastation that was there. You mentioned 90% of the houses.
Yeah, and not just that. It's the toll that it's going to take to be. And listen, there are churches that are doing wonderful things. I know the Catholic Church is doing wonderful things in the area. Everyone really is trying to pitch in. It's just that if you look at how what's really going to make this, the tragedy of this is how long it's going to take everybody to recover, because everyone's affected, and it's the type of thing. Water damage, it just takes so much to get rid of that damage. And so you're going to be talking about months of people out of their homes or living in homes with mold damage. It's been a very slow federal response so far, and people are looking at somewhere around $10,000 to $30,000 is all they're going to get for those people that didn't have flood insurance. And so the stress of it is, you can feel that people right now are in that moment where they're able to help one another and they're actively doing something, and that's still going on. Whenever normal life sort of kicks back in, there's going to be an emotional toll that starts to drain on people as well.
Well, you know, Sky, let me share with you, since we've gone through this in New York in two different ways and two very different disasters and tragedies. There was the attack on September 11th, which was one type of disaster and tragedy that the community had to respond to. And then there was Superstorm Sandy, which has some of the characteristics that you've described down in Baton Rouge. And what I often say is that there oftentimes is a tremendous amount of goodwill, generosity, that people want to help, and that it needs to get done, whatever it is, yesterday. That's when people need to undone. However, my caveat in this is recovery requires talent, skills, capacity, and professionalism. Now, it's not enough to have a good heart. And let me give you two examples. I'll give you two examples. One is we had a lot of people in New York who, you know, went in, put up drywall, and did all of that type of stuff to get people back in, but they didn't take the mold out behind it. So what happens 6, 8, a year later is you got to redo it over again because they didn't do it right in order to really make the long-term impact. So that's one thing on a physical level. And then on a human level, people who are traumatized by this, those who have ongoing issues that they're dealing with, they need some professionals who can help them. And it's not merely mental health. Maybe it's a little bit, it's some of it is emotional, but professional to negotiate a FEMA system, to negotiate a system which has all these different rules that they need to put their life back together again. And I think that's one of the things that I think we need to make sure that the public at large understands, that recovery is hard work, requires professionalism and capacity in addition to the goodwill that so many people have.
That's exactly right. And Monsignor, let me say that the work that you did and continue to do, especially after 9/11, was and has been absolutely inspirational to people like me. But you're exactly right that that's one of the things within the media context, that there has to be a better job in national media to do those types of things. Like those are the kinds of conversations that need to be had. Those are the types of things that we should use our resources towards, to have those kinds of conversations, to help people accelerate that massive FEMA learning curve. And it frustrates people that we don't get that, right? And they feel left out of the process. Governance is conversational, right? Governance is the ability, legitimacy is conferred through conversation. And when people don't feel like they have the ability to talk with those that are governing them, there's this idea that the government isn't legitimate, and that whether that be perceived or real, people have that feeling, and they perceive that they're not able to talk with their government.
Well, I'll give you an example. I won't mention who it was or whatever, but I mean, we still are helping people to recover, and periodically papers cross my desk that require a signature, blah 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 blah, and we did a whole bunch of stuff and reimbursements things. And I got one that needed to be redone again because on like a many, many $1,000 reimbursement, it was a penny off. And so they wanted the whole thing redone over and over again. Well, you know, a little bit of common sense would go a long way with regard to making this thing work. And again, if to get off topic a little bit, you know, everybody describes this election in which, you know, both candidates are perceived unfavorably. Both are unlike, they talk about this being the highest ever. And whether it be on the left or the right, you have so many people who want to have nothing to do with government as it's currently construed, or as it's currently non-functioning. I think what you're talking about is these types of things lend kind of a little bit of rationale to those irrational opinions.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's exactly right. So that it gives people, it exacerbates it, right? Like this is the example that people use of that in practice now. And so they can point to that, and we really need to do a better job. I mean, I know people that are in politics, and they don't go in to be disconnected from the citizenry. Right. They genuinely go into politics because they want to help. And we just need to have we need to do a better job of having citizens be able to have the ability to express and themselves and speak with their leaders. And I think the national media really needs to do a better job of that.
Well, you know, it's interesting, again, if I could get a little bit distracted for a moment, is 90% of the reporting on this election has been about emails, language, foundations, personality, stuff like that. I've heard almost no conversation about what are we going to do to help educate people? What are we going to do to help people have decent housing? What are going to have people? A little bit talk about jobs. There's a little bit talk about jobs. But, I mean, we haven't talked about the real things that are important to people because, as you say, we get distracted or we get entertained by what's titillating because, you know, it makes us feel like whatever in terms of it. So,
No, absolutely. And it also And the way that it's done also removes the ability for linear thought on an issue, right? Like this is going to...
Hey, Sky, I'll take any kind of thought.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
Anyway, Sky, listen, we got to just another minute, so I just want to really say thank you to you for lending your perspective on it. You've helped our listeners throughout the country understand what's going on by sharing with you your in-law story, your mom's story, the volunteer story. And so we've tried to do our little bit to make sure that the story is more reported than it has been. So, Sky Cooley, thank you so much for being with us. This is Just Love, and I'm delighted that we had the opportunity to add a little bit of enlightenment to what's going on in Louisiana. And, again, a number of years ago, I was on one of those panels when there was a previous presidential election. I got to ask a question of the candidates, but I decided what my question was going to be this time, Tom, if I got to ask either of the candidates my question. My question would be, you want to be president of the United States. It's my understanding that FEMA is an agency of the executive branch of government. What are you going to do to make sure that FEMA responds appropriately in a timely fashion to the inevitable disasters that we have in the country? You're the president. How are you going to be the chief executive officer and make FEMA work?
That's an awesome question, Monsieur.
It
I hope
is,
you get
because,
to ask it.
Because nobody wants to take responsibility.
Exactly.
And that's it. But anyway, listen, remember those people who are struggling to recover in Baton Rouge. Catholic Charities USA is a place you can go to find out how you can donate more. Catholic Charities Baton Rouge. Thanks for being with us. This is Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.